known her forever, and we understand each other in a weird way I can't describe. She can tell what I'm thinking just by looking at me. Lorena is ghetto, loud, and acts ignorant as hell sometimes, but I love her. She'll fight anyone who even looks at me funny. One time, Fabiola, a girl we've known since grade school, made fun of my pants, and Lorena knocked her desk over and told her she looked like a scared chihuahua. The bell rings before I can ask Lorena to go downtown with me after school. I run to algebra before I'm late. Not only do I hate math with every fiber of my being, I suspect my teacher, Mr. Simmons, is a racist Republican. He has a handlebar mustache, and his desk is covered with American flags. He even has a tiny Confederate one he probably thinks we don't notice. What kind of person would have something like that? He also has a dumb Ronald Reagan quote about jelly beans taped to the wall, which is another obvious clue. You can tell a lot about a fellow's character by the way he eats jelly beans. What does that even mean? How exactly do people eat jelly beans differently? Is that supposed to be deep or something? No one else seems to notice or care about these kinds of things, though. I tried to explain it to Lorena, but she just shrugged and said, "White people." While Mr. Simmons goes on and on about integers, I work on a poem in my journal. I only have a couple of pages left. Red ribbons unraveling with the noise of my chaos. A light beating like a drum. I opened my wings and took a swim in a warm, euphoric dream of hands pressed to faces, opened to the mad dancing, and combusted into a new constellation. The dream too warm for the flesh, too rough for the soft touch of fingertips, holding my universe in a single grasp. Everything sank, falling to the ground, became blue. The sunset's raining behind me like a monsoon. As I'm daydreaming about more images for my poem, Mr. Simmons calls on me, of course. He probably noticed my hatred for him pulsing around me.
Julia, what is the answer to problem four?
He takes his glasses off and squints at me. He says my name the wrong way, Julia, even though I already told him how to pronounce it. Ama has never let me say it the English way. She says she's the one who named me, and that people can't go around changing it for their own convenience. We agree on that, at least. It's not like it's hard to pronounce. I'm sorry. I don't know. I tell Mr. Simmons.
Were you paying attention?
No, I wasn't. Sorry.
And why not?
My face feels hot. Everyone is watching me, waiting for my humiliation like vultures. Why can't he just back off? Look, I said I was sorry. I don't know what else to tell you. Mr. Simmons is really pissed now.
I want you to come to the board and solve the problem, he says, pointing at me.
I guess he was never taught that it's impolite to point at people. I want to get all Bartleby about it, tell him I don't fucking feel like it. But I know I shouldn't. I've gotten in enough trouble lately. But why does he have to pick on me? Doesn't he know my sister is dead? My heart is racing, and I can feel a thick pulse in my left cheek. I wonder if my face is twitching. No.
What did you say to me?
I said no. Now Mr. Simmons is pink as ham. His hands are on his hips, and he looks as though he wants to bash my skull. Before he says anything else, I shove my stuff into my backpack and run out the door. I can't deal with this today.
Get back here right now, young lady,
he yells after me. But I keep going. I can hear everyone screaming, laughing, and clapping as I walk out the door.
Damn, son!
I hear Marcos yell.
Oh, hell no! She told you!
I think that's Jorge, which makes me almost forgive him for having a rat tail. The sky is clear, a blue so bright and beautiful that it hurts to look at it. Maybe I should have waited until the end of the day to see if I could convince Lorena to go with me, but there's no way I'm going back inside now. The birds are carrying on, and the streets smell like frying chorizo. Cars are honking. Men and women are selling fruit and corn from carts. Mexican music is blaring from every direction. Most of the time, I hate walking through my neighborhood because of the gangbangers and guys whistling from their cars. But today, nobody even looks at me. I know I shouldn't have left school, but Ama is always talking about how it's a sin to waste this and that, and it feels like a sin to waste a day like this. Besides, now I don't have to wait all day to go to the Continental. As I walk to the bus, I watch a helicopter fly toward downtown until it disappears into a tiny black speck. I can see the hazy skyline in the distance. As long as I can find the Sears Tower, I know I can't get lost. A green balloon floats past a power line, then gets tangled in a tree. I remember a movie I watched in first grade about a red balloon that chased a French boy throughout the streets of Paris. I imagine this balloon coming loose and chasing a little Mexican girl throughout the streets of Chicago. I walk into the most unappetizing diner in the whole entire city. The counters are avocado green, and most of the stools are torn. Even the windows look greasy. It makes me feel like I went into a time machine. It reminds me of the painting Nighthawks, but even more depressing. I'm not sure where I am exactly. I think I'm near the South Loop. I sit down at the counter, and the waitress asks me what I'll have in a thick European accent. Maybe she's Polish or from one of those other countries in Eastern Europe. I can't tell exactly. She looks tired but pretty in a way that doesn't call too much attention to itself, in a way that doesn't say, "Hey, hey, look at me." I only have $8.58 in my pocket, and I still have to get back on the bus or train, so I have to choose carefully. What I really want is this meal called the hobo, which is made of eggs, hash browns, cheese, and bacon. Practically everything I love, but it's $7.99. I won't have enough left to get back home. I order a cheese Danish and a cup of coffee, even though the smell of bacon makes my mouth drip. I read the newspaper on the counter while I drink my coffee, which is so awful I can barely stomach it. It tastes as if they boiled old socks and dumped the liquid into a coffee pot. But I gulp it down anyway because I'm not about to waste my $2. And the Danish is stale, of course. I should have seen that coming. I scoop out the cheese and eat it with my finger.
"Shouldn't you be in school?"
the waitress asks as she refills my mug. "Yeah, I should be, but one of my teachers was being a total jerk."
"Hmm..."
She raises an eyebrow. She seems suspicious.
"He was, I swear." "What did he do?"
"He called on me to solve a problem on the board. I didn't know the answer, but he kept insisting. It was so embarrassing." I realize how stupid this sounds when I say it out loud.
"That doesn't sound too bad," she says.
"Yeah, I guess it doesn't, huh?" We both laugh.
"Well, I think you should probably go back before you get in trouble."
She smiles. "My sister is dead," I blurt out.
"What?"
she asks, as if she's misheard. She died last month. I can't concentrate. I guess that's the real reason I left.
Oh, no,
she says, her pretty face now sad and severe. Why did I tell her this? It's not her problem.
You poor girl. I'm so sorry.
Thank you, I say, still not knowing why I just told her about Olga. She squeezes my hand, then walks to a table behind me. I write in my journal for a little while and try to figure out what to do next. Might as well make a day of it since I'm already going downtown. Whatever I do has to be free, or close to it, or else I'll have to walk home. After some brainstorming and doodling, I decide on the Art Institute, which is one of my favorite places in the whole world. Well, in Chicago. I haven't seen much of the world yet. They have a suggested donation, but I never pay it. Keyword, suggested. When I ask the waitress for my bill, she tells me someone's already paid for me. What? Who? Wait, I don't understand.
The man who was sitting over there.
She points to an empty stool at the end of the counter.
He heard you were having a bad day.
I can't believe it. Why would someone do something like that without asking for anything in return? He didn't even hit on me or stare at my boobs or wait around for me to thank him. I run out to the street to find him, but it's too late. He's gone. I take out my notebook and stare at the address for the Continental. I'm not very good with directions, but I think I can probably figure it out without a map. I walk northwest. It's not that hard when you know where the lake is. The buildings are blocking the sun, so it's starting to feel cold. I wish I would have brought a jacket. A homeless man with no legs screams in front of a Starbucks. I think he's drunk because I can't understand what he's saying. Something about a llama? A mother and daughter brush past me with two giant American Girl bags. I've heard those dolls cost hundreds and hundreds of dollars. I can't wait until I have enough money to buy whatever the hell I want without worrying about every single penny. I, however, would never spend it on something as stupid as a doll. The Continental is small but lavish, lots of blue and off-white. It's called a boutique hotel, whatever the hell that means. The woman at the front desk hangs up the phone when I approach her. Can I help you, miss? Her hair is drawn into a slick, tight ponytail that looks like it hurts, and her perfume smells like a dusty flower in summer twilight. Did you ever see this girl come in here? She was my sister. I give her a picture of Olga at Tia Cuca's barbecue a month before she died. She's holding a plate of food and smiling with her eyes closed. I figured it was best to use the most recent one I could find. I'm sorry, but we're not allowed to give any information about our guests. She smiles apologetically. I see a tiny smear of pink lipstick on her teeth. But she's dead. She winces and shakes her head. I'm so sorry. Can you at least tell me if you've seen her? Again, I'm so, so sorry for your loss, but I can't. It's against our policy, sweetheart. Why would a policy matter if she's dead? Can you just look up her name? Olga Reyes. Please? The only people we're allowed to give information to is the police. Fuck. I mutter under my breath. I know it's not her fault, but I'm so frustrated. Okay, well, can you at least tell me if this hotel is connected to the Skyline? Are they owned by the same company?
Yes, they're a part of the same conglomerate. Why do you ask?
Thanks. I walk out the door without bothering to explain. Before entering the museum, I take a walk around the gardens outside. Everyone is desperately trying to hang on to the sunshine, enjoying the unexpected warmth before winter takes a cold gray crap on the city and makes us all miserable again. Though the trees are changing colors, flowers are still in bloom, and there are bees everywhere. Everything is so perfect, I wish I could keep it in a jar. A young woman in a flowered dress is breastfeeding her baby. A man with long gray hair is lying on a bench, with his head on his wife's lap. A couple is making out against a tree. For a split second, my mind tricks me into believing the girl is Olga, because they have the same long ponytail, skinny body, and flat butt. But when she turns around, she looks nothing like my sister. When I tell the woman at the counter that I will pay $0 instead of the suggested donation, she eyeballs me as if I were some sort of criminal. Don't we all have a right to art? Are you trying to keep me from an education? That seems very bourgeoisie, if you ask me. I learned that word in history class last year and try to use it whenever it's appropriate, because Mr. Ingman always tells us that language is power. The woman just sighs, rolls her eyes, and hands me the ticket. She probably hates her job. I know I would. I walk over to my favorite painting, Judith Slaying Holofernes. We learned about the artist, Artemisia Gentileschi, in art class last year. My teacher, Ms. Schwartz, told us something bad happened to her, but wouldn't tell us what, so I looked it up after class. It turns out that her painting teacher raped her when she was 17. What a scumbag. Almost all the Renaissance and Baroque paintings we studied in class were of baby Jesus, which is not very interesting. So when I saw Artemisia Gentileschi's paintings of biblical women killing all those horrible men, my heart trembled. She was such a badass. Every time I see Judith slaying Holofernes, I notice something new. That's what's so great about art and poetry. Right when you think you get it, you see something else. You can find a million hidden meanings. What I love most about the painting is that Judith and her maid are slicing off the man's head, but they don't even look scared. They're totally casual, as if they're just washing dishes or something. I wonder if that's how it really happened. When Ms. Schwartz said that one of her paintings was at our museum, I decided I needed to see it right away. This is my fourth time this year. I love art almost as much as I love books. It's hard to explain the way I feel when I see a beautiful painting. It's a combination of scared, happy, excited, and sad, all at once. Like a soft light that glows in my chest and stomach for a few seconds. Sometimes it takes my breath away, which I didn't know was a real thing until I stood in front of this painting. I used to think it was just some saying in pop songs about stupid people in love. I had a similar feeling when I read an Emily Dickinson poem. I was too excited and threw my book across the room. It was so good that it made me angry. People would think I'm nuts if I try to explain it to them, so I don't. I crouched down to get a better look at the bottom part, which I never paid much attention to before. The blood is dripping on the white sheet, and the fibers of the silk are so delicately painted that it's hard to believe they aren't real. I can't get enough of this place. I can be here forever and ever, studying all the art and walking up and down the dramatic marble staircases. I love the Thorn miniature rooms, too. I can spend hours imagining a tiny version of myself living in those fancy little houses. I always have to come to the museum alone, though, because no one will ever join me. I tried dragging Lorena once, but she just laughed and called me a nerd.
I suppose I can't argue with that. I asked Olga one time, but she was going shopping with Angie that day. As I wander around, I find a painting I've never noticed before. Anna Maria Dashwood, later Marchioness of Ely, by Sir Thomas Lawrence. I gasp when I see the woman's face, because my sister's eyes are staring back at me. I never paid attention to that expression before, neither joyous nor somber, but as if she were trying to tell me something. I walk around and around and lose track of time. I look at my favorite paintings again, The Old Guitarist by Pablo Picasso, The Cybernetic Lobster Telephone by Salvador Dalí, and The One Made of Dots by Georges Seurat. Every time I see it, I promise myself I'll go to Paris someday. I'll roam through the city by myself, eating cheese until I burst. It's rush hour when I finally get on the train to go back home. The bus is too unreliable at this time. All the men and women in suits are all sweaty and tired. If I end up being an office lady who wears slacks and changes into white sneakers to walk home from the train, I'll just jump off a skyscraper. The train is crammed with people, but I find a window seat facing backward next to a man in a filthy coat who smiles and says, "Good evening," when I sit down. He smells like pee, but at least he has good manners. I take out my journal to make some notes. I love to watch the city from above. The graffiti on factories, the honking cars, the old buildings with shattered windows, everyone in a hurry. It's exciting to see all the movement and energy. Even though I want to move far away from here, moments like these make me love Chicago. A couple of black kids near the doors start beatboxing, which makes a man frown and shake his head. I think it sounds amazing, though. I wonder how they can make that kind of music with their mouths. How can they sound exactly like machines? I go back to the poem I started in Mr. Simmons' class. When a woman with a burned face makes her way through the crowded aisle, asking everyone to spare some change. When she gets closer, I see that her green t-shirt says, "God has been so good to me." The letters are so bright and shiny they feel like they're yelling. She puts her hand in front of me, and I reach into my backpack to pull out the rest of the money I have left. The mystery guy at the diner paid for my food today, so why not? "Have a blessed day," she says, and smiles. "Jesus loves you." He doesn't, but I smile back anyway. I look out the window and watch the skyline lit up by the evening sun. The buildings reflect a dazzling orange red, and if you glance, it almost looks like the buildings are on fire. I bet the school has already called my parents and I'm in some deep shit again. It was worth it, though. I open my journal to a blank page and write, "God has been so good to me," before I forget. Chapter 4. On Saturday afternoon, I tell Ama I'm going to the library, but I walk to Angie's house instead. I've called her a million times, and she hasn't called me back. It's pissing me off. I'm not sure what I'm going to say, but I need to talk to her. I keep thinking of Olga's underwear, the hotel key, and that strange smirk on her face when she died. For weeks, I've had this feeling that won't leave me alone, like tiny needles in the back of my head. Maybe Angie can tell me something about my sister that I don't know. It's beginning to get chilly now. The air smells like leaves and the promise of rain. I hate this time of year. When it begins to get dark earlier in the day, I start feeling more depressed than usual. All I ever want to do is take a scalding shower and read in bed until I fall asleep. The long dark days feel like endless black ribbon. This year will be even worse now that Olga is gone. Angie and Olga met when they were in kindergarten, so I've known Angie my whole life. I used to admire her because she's so stylish and pretty, with her wild curly hair and wide green eyes that look forever surprised. In high school, she drew pictures of exotic landscapes that Olga taped to her walls. Though she is poor, like us, she has a sharp fashion sense, matching unusual colors and patterns in ways that somehow make sense. She makes outfits from the flea market look good on her. She smells like vanilla, and her laugh reminds me of wind chimes. I always thought Angie would grow up to be something awesome, like a designer or an artist. But it turned out she was another Mexican daughter who didn't want to leave home. She works downtown and still lives with her parents. Angie's mom, Doña Ramona, answers the door and gives me a wet kiss on the cheek. Although I've known her forever, I still get startled, because she looks old enough to be Angie's grandma. I'm guessing that on top of having Angie late in life, she also had some tough times. Está acabada, Ama always says, a word that makes me think of an old, dirty dish sponge. Every time I see Doña Ramona, I swear to God she's wearing an apron. She probably goes to church in it. The house smells like roasted chiles, and it's so warm that my glasses fog. My eyes begin to water, and I cough uncontrollably. It happens every time Mama is making a certain kind of salsa.
Ay, mija, qué delicada,
Doña Ramona says, slapping me on the back.
Let me call Angie and bring you a glass of water.
Everyone likes to remind me how sensitive I am, as if I didn't know.
How are you feeling these days?
She yells from the kitchen.
Angie has taken this very hard, pobrecita.
I'm better, thank you. I think Angie's family may be the last on earth to have plastic covers on their sofas. On top of that, there are porcelain dolls on doilies on nearly every surface of the house. Mexican ladies are always knitting doilies for everything. Doilies for the TV, doilies for vases, doilies for useless knickknacks. Doilies as far as the eye can see. How pointless. This is what Ama would call naco. We may be poor, but at least we're not this tacky. When Angie finally comes out of her room, she's wearing a ratty gray robe and her hair is matted and greasy. Her eyes are bright red, as if she'd been crying all night. It's been several weeks now, and she still looks like a disaster. She doesn't seem pleased to see me. Angie hugs me and tells me to sit down. The plastic cover squeaks under me. Doña Ramona gives me a glass of water and shuffles back to the kitchen to continue her cooking. How have you been? I ask, though she probably looks the way she feels.
Jesus, Julia, how do you think?
She snaps. Angie is nice to me most of the time, but I guess Olga's death has scrambled her up too. No one is the same anymore.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. It's just, I can't sleep. Look at me. I look horrible, she says.
Angie is right. The dark purple rings under her eyes make her look like someone punched her out. Ojerosa, Ama would say.
No, you're fine, I lie. Just as pretty as always.
I try smiling, but it's so fake it hurts my face. Angie glares at me, and the silence grows like a web around us. I hear something in the kitchen crackling in grease, which almost sounds like rain. The clock ticks and ticks. At moments like this, the concept of time confuses me. A minute lasts an hour.
Can we go to your room?
I finally whisper. I want to ask you something in private. Angie looks confused, but says okay and leads me down the hall. I can tell Angie isn't wearing a bra, and I try not to stare, but I can see her nipples through her robe, which reminds me of the time I walked in on her touching Olga's boobs when I was 7. As soon as they saw me open the door, Olga pulled down her shirt and looked down at the floor. All I remember is that she seemed ashamed, and that her boobs were small and pointy. I sit on Angie's unmade bed. It smells like she hasn't washed her sheets in a few weeks, and the floor is covered with clothes. There are pictures of her and Olga all over her walls and dresser, at the park, in a photo booth, grade school, prom, graduation, dinners. She also has the program from the wake and funeral on her nightstand. It has an angel and some stupid prayer about heaven. I threw mine in the garbage because I couldn't bear to look at it anymore.
You miss her, huh?
I ask.
Yeah, of course.
Angie stares at the picture of her and Olga in their graduation gowns.
What did you want to ask me?
Why haven't you returned any of my calls? Angie sighs.
I haven't wanted to talk to anyone these days.
Well, I'm not exactly feeling social myself, but I'm her sister, and the least you could have done is call me back. Angie stares at her pictures and says nothing.
Was it you that Olga was texting when she died?
Huh?
Was it you?
Look, I don't know. Angie rubs her eyes and yawns.
Why does that even matter? She's gone.
Either it was you or it wasn't. It's not that complicated. She was hit at about 5:30. You would know by looking at your phone. It's not like my sister had that many friends.
What exactly are you looking for, Julia?
I just feel there's something I don't know.
Like what?
I have no idea. That's what I'm trying to find out. I feel exasperated. Maybe this was a mistake. What can I tell Angie? That I went through Olga's room and found slutty underwear and a hotel key? That I never had a real interest in her until she died because I'm a horrible and selfish human being? Angie looks up at the ceiling, as if she's trying not to cry. I've done that a million times. I'm the master of keeping my tears inside my ducts. I found some weird underwear and a hotel key, I say. The Continental. Angie tightens her robe and looks down at her chipped pink toenails.
And?
What do you mean, and? Call me crazy, but that's pretty strange.
Julia, you're always exaggerating.
I don't know what you mean by weird underwear.
Weird, as in skanky.
I'm starting to lose my patience.
And a hotel key? When did Olga ever go anywhere? Why would she have that?
How would I know? Angie rolls her eyes, which pisses me off.
Because you were her best friend, duh.
You know, Julia, you're always causing trouble, creating problems for your family. Now that she's dead, all of a sudden you want to know everything about her? You hardly even spoke to her. Why didn't you ask her anything when she was alive? Maybe you wouldn't have to be here asking me questions about her love life.
Love life? So you're telling me she was dating someone?
No, that's not what I'm saying. You're putting words in my mouth.
But you just said,
Julia, you need to get going. I have things to do.
Angie gets up and opens the door.
If I weren't so dark, my face would be a dazzling red. It feels as if someone dumped a bucket of boiling water over my head. Angie doesn't understand how hard it's been for me to speak to anyone in my family. She hasn't seen how the silence and tension have been smothering us for years. She doesn't get that I feel like a three-headed alien in my own home. And why is Angie so defensive? Something isn't right, but I don't know what to say. What exactly should I demand? I just keep sitting in her grimy room, with the taste of chile lodged in my throat, while the guilt and anger spread through me like lava. Okay, this is pointless, I say. Thank you so much, Angie. Thank you for being so nice and supportive. Julia, stop. Look, I'm sorry. This has been hard for me. I feel like I'm falling apart. Angie puts her head in her hands. You lost your best friend, but I lost my sister. You think I'm just some selfish, narcissistic kid, but my life fucking sucks right now. Every night I expect Olga to come home, and she doesn't. I just stare at the door like a fool. Angie doesn't respond. As I leave her room, Doña Ramona comes rushing toward me, her slippers flap, flap, flapping on the linoleum. That has to be one of the most irritating noises I've ever heard.
Aren't you going to eat, mija? Come, sit. I'm making sopes, she insists.
No, gracias, señora. I'm not hungry. Her worn brown face crumples with worry.
What's wrong, criatura? Are you crying?
No. The chiles are burning my eyes. I lie. Chapter 5. After school, Lorena and I go to her house to do some internet snooping. So I call Ama and tell her that I'll be home late because we're working on a project. At first, she says no, because she's still mad about me ditching school. But when I explain to her that my imaginary group assignment is due tomorrow, she gives in. Ama doesn't let me go anywhere unless I have a specific reason. If I tell her that I want to spend some time with a friend, she asks me what for, and says she doesn't want me in other people's cocinas, which is stupid. First, I don't understand why she thinks it's so scandalous to be in other people's kitchens. Second, most of the time we're not even in the kitchen. We're in the living room. Ama doesn't have any friends and sees no point to having any. She says all a woman needs is her family. According to her, only orphans and whores run around in the streets by themselves. If Ama isn't working, shopping for groceries, or cooking and cleaning at home, she's usually with my aunts, or her comadre, Juanita, who is also her cousin. Oh, and on Saturdays and Sundays, she's at church. She hardly leaves our neighborhood. Her world seems small, in my opinion, but that's how she wants it. Maybe it runs in the family because Olga was like that too, and Apa's favorite place is our couch. Instead of trying to convince Ama that I need to go out and talk to people I'm not related to, I often make up homework assignments. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. Lorena dumps the hot chips we bought at the corner store into a big bowl and squeezes lime juice over them until they're completely drenched. We eat them quickly, as if it's some sort of race. Our fingers are stained red, and our noses are runny by the time we're finished. Even though I eat half a giant bag, I still want more. I ask Lorena if she has any more food, but she says no. My stomach grunts. I can only eat junk food in secret because it's forbidden in our house. I guess it's ironic that Apa works at a candy factory. Ama says Americans eat nothing but garbage, which is why everyone here is so fat and ugly. She has the perfect body and expects everyone to be as lucky as she is. She's never taken us to McDonald's, not even once, but no one ever believes me. Sometimes when I walk home from school, I buy a dollar cheeseburger and eat it in 3 bites before I get to our door. That's probably why I've been getting kind of porky. My boobs keep getting heavier and heavier and sometimes hurt my back. Ama says there's no need for burgers and fries when we have a pot of beans and packets of tortillas at home. Whenever I ask her if we can order pizza or Chinese food, she says I'm spoiled and tells me to make myself a quesadilla. Other times, she pinches my stomach and walks away from me without saying anything. So, what do you want to look for? Lorena takes a pitcher of water from the fridge. I'm not sure, to be honest. I haven't told you, but I went through her things the other day. And? I found some underwear. Like, hooker underwear. What are you even talking about? Lorena seems annoyed. She says I exaggerate everything. They were scandalous. Thongs and this lingerie type thing. Hello? I wear thongs too. Lorena rolls her eyes. But this is Olga we're talking about. She didn't even swear. Ama would have snapped if she'd found them. She hates stuff like that. She doesn't even like it when women wear shorts. So what if she wanted to feel sexy? She was a grown woman. Okay, well, how would you explain the hotel key I found? I pull it out of my backpack. This, I say, and I throw it on the table. I don't know. Maybe she used it as a bookmark or something. Doesn't Angie work at a hotel? Yeah, but not this one. Something's not right, I'm telling you. I think you're probably wasting your time. Lorena walks to her room and brings me her laptop from her bedroom. It weighs about 100 pounds. It was a hand-me-down from her cousin, and it's old as hell. What do you want to look for? I don't know. Facebook, I guess. But I don't know if Olga even used it. I'm telling you, she was an old lady trapped in a 22-year-old's body. You're not on it either. Yeah, because it's stupid. People are boring enough in real life without having to see how boring they are online. Plus, I don't have internet. So what's the point? I'm not about to go to the library to use it. Lorena shakes her head and enters her password. I search for Olga's name, but there are 12 Olga Reyeses. I click on each one, but none of them resemble my sister. Maybe she used a different name? How would I know what name she used? I don't know. Why don't you look through Angie's page and see if you can find her, or go through her pictures or something? We find Angie, but when we click on her profile, everything is private. All we see is the profile picture of her and Olga when they were kids. The caption says, "I miss you, friend." Damn it, Angie's useless. Do you know any other friends, like, from work or something? Not really. She used to have lunch with this girl sometimes. Denise, I think. But I don't know her last name. Defeated, I close the laptop. While Lorena fiddles with her phone and begins playing her horribly sexist rap songs, I walk over to the altar her mom has set up in the corner of the living room. I like to see the way it changes every time I come over. Lorena's mom worships Santa Muerte, the scary skeleton saint. And if Ama knew about this, she'd never let me see Lorena again in my life. She already dislikes her mom because she thinks she wears way too much makeup and dresses like a teenager. I guess she's right. Lorena's mom's eyeshadow is heavy, and her eyeliner curls up from the corners of her eyes. She kind of looks like a homely Cleopatra. Most of the time, she wears skin-tight spandex dresses that make her body resemble a soft-serve ice cream cone. Not at all flattering. Lorena takes after her mom when it comes to makeup. She also dyes and highlights her hair, so it ends up a mixture of yellow, orange, and red. The colors remind me of flames, and when she wears her hair in a ponytail, she almost looks like a torch. She's prettier with dark hair, but she doesn't listen to me. She says I don't know what the hell I'm talking about, that why should she listen to me when I dress like a homeless lesbian? She ignores me about her hazel contacts, too. Anyway, Lorena and her mom make questionable choices when it comes to their looks, and Ama always feels the need to point them out, as if I didn't already notice.
That old lady shouldn't be running around like a quinceañera. She has no shame,
Ama whispers to me. Although Lorena's mother isn't the best parent, and she looks lumpy and nuts, she's always been nice to me, feeding me cookies or cake whenever I see her. A few days after Olga died, she took Lorena and me out for ice cream. Today, Santa Muerta is wearing a red satin dress. Last time, she wore a black cloak, which wasn't as scary because what else would a skeleton wear? In front of the doll, there are three fresh candles, a pack of cheap cigarettes, an open can of tecate, a bowl of apples, and a white rose starting to brown at the edges. There's also a new framed picture of Lorena's dad riding a brown horse. Lorena looks exactly like him when she smiles. Even though Lorena's mom has been with her boyfriend, Jose Luis, for years now, she still has her dead husband's pictures hanging everywhere. When Olga died, Lorena's mom asked for a picture of her so she could pray for her soul. But I thought it was too bizarre, so I pretended I forgot. Lorena never talks about her dad, and I never ask about him because it's really none of my business. It's up to her if she wants to talk about him. I don't like to pry. The only reason I know what happened to him is because a few months ago, she and I got shit-faced after school, and it spilled out like a sack of fallen beans. After about the fourth glass of Alizé, which her cousin had bought for us, Lorena started crying out of nowhere. Maybe it was the mariachi song with the sad trumpets that was playing on the radio. I don't know. I asked her what was wrong, and between sobs and gulps of the syrupy booze, she told me that she missed her dad. She was crying so hard that I could barely understand her. Her mascara started streaming down her face, which made her look like a grotesque clown. It would have been funny under different circumstances, like the time we got caught in the rain and her makeup smeared like a gasoline rainbow, and we had to go back to her house to fix it. I didn't know what to say, so I kept rubbing her back and smoothing her hair. After she calmed down a little, she was able to tell me the story. But I think I missed some bits and pieces because of the crying. Lorena said that when she was 7 years old, her dad went back to Mexico for his mother's funeral, even though everyone told him not to. He had lived in Chicago for 10 years, but still didn't have his papers. In order for him to return to the U.S., he had to cross the border with a coyote, just like he had the first time. Lorena's mom even dreamt about it the night before he left, so she knew something bad was going to happen. In the dream, an eagle pecked at his heart while he sat there watching it. She begged him not to go, told him he'd die, but he didn't listen. He said he loved his madrecita too much. After his mother's funeral, Lorena's dad took the bus from Guerrero all the way to the Arizona border, where he met a man from his hometown who everyone had recommended. This coyote took all their money and then abandoned the entire group of mojados while they walked through the desert. They got lost for 2 days, and the seven in the group, including a baby, eventually died of thirst. Border Patrol found them all 2 weeks after they were supposed to arrive on the other side, and shipped his decomposed body to his hometown in Mexico, where they buried him. Lorena and her mom never got to see him again. That's when I started to understand why Lorena is so fucked up. My parents crossed the border like that too, and even got robbed, but at least they made it here alive. As I study her dad's pictures in the living room, Lorena starts rolling a joint at the kitchen table. She's so much better at it than I am, basically a professional. "What are you doing?" she asks, without looking up. "Why do you keep staring at pictures of my dad?" I don't know how to answer because I'm not sure why. Curiosity, I suppose. "Doesn't Jose Luis feel weird about all of these pictures still here?" I finally ask.
"I don't care what that motherfucker thinks," Lorena says, and licks the joint. "You want some or what?"
She hands it to me. I've smoked weed a total of 5 times now, and every single time I start worrying about the stupidest things. The last time we smoked, I thought the police were knocking on the door. The time before that, Lorena was on her phone, and I was convinced she was texting mean things about me. But I keep smoking because I'm hoping that one day it will feel good, that I'll be all floaty and calm, like everyone says. "I wonder if Olga ever smoked weed," I say.
"Olga? Are you kidding me? No way. That girl was practically a nun."
"Yeah, I'm not sure about that anymore." I take a hit, and it makes me cough so hard my eyes water. I run to the kitchen for a drink. Lorena laughs and throws a couch pillow at my face as I walk back to the living room. It nearly knocks the glass out of my hands. I start laughing too, and dump the rest of my water on her head.
"You're such a bitch!" Lorena screams. "You wet the couch!"
She's still kind of smiling though, so I know she's not really mad.
"You started it!"
Lorena walks to her room and comes back wearing a different shirt. She changes the music to Narco Corridos, those horrible Mexican songs about drug traffickers who buy diamond-encrusted guns and cut each other's heads off. When the first song winds down, the feeling suddenly clicks inside me. Everything is in slow motion, and my body is light and heavy at the same time. It's different from the times before. I'm not paranoid, just a little confused and unfocused. My contacts are so dry it's hard to keep my eyes open. Lorena takes a few hits before passing it back to me. I shake my head no.
"That's it?"
"I can't."
"You can't be high already."
"I am, so leave me alone.
And if I go home like this, my mom is going to ship me to Mexico for the rest of my life." "God damn it, this quinceañera. What a pain in the ass."
"Oh my God, get over it. I wish I could have had one, but my mom is always broke as hell." "I don't even know where they're getting the money. All they ever do is complain about how poor we are. It's like they want to pretend everything is fine. They just want to put on a show for the rest of the family."
"I can't imagine you in one of those dresses," Lorena laughs. "I don't know what your mom is thinking. It's like she doesn't know you at all. Or she doesn't care."
"I know. The party isn't for me. It's for my sister. It's not even my freaking birthday. Can you believe that?"
"Come on, let's look at some dresses. Maybe you'll find one you like," she says, and reaches for her laptop.
"Doubt it." Lorena pulls up some websites and begins scrolling through dresses. All of them are atrocious, a few even rainbow-colored. When we get to a ladybug pattern abomination, I'm done. I just can't. They should be classified as crimes against humanity.
They should be tried in a court of law. Stop, please, before I vomit my chips.
Lorena sighs and begins plucking her eyebrows in front of a small hand mirror. I close my eyes for what feels like minutes, and when I open them again, I become hypnotized by the cheetah print pattern on her leggings, which I hadn't noticed before. I am so high. The more I look, the more shapes I see. Faces, cars, flowers, trees, babies, clowns. And then, for some reason, I start imagining Lorena as a cheetah running through a forest. It's her same head, but on a cheetah's body. This weed must be excellent. I laugh so hard I can hardly speak. It hurts, but feels good to finally laugh again. What is it? Why are you laughing? Lorena is confused. I try to explain, but I can't catch my breath. Tears are streaming down my face. What is wrong with you? I try to tell her, but I can't get the words out. My face is hot, and my stomach muscles are aching. You're a cheetah, I finally manage to say, gasping for air. A what? A cheetah! I don't know what you're saying. A cheetah, I say. Maybe the laughter is contagious, or Lorena is high now too, because she starts laughing harder than I am. I try to think of things that are not funny. Socks, cancer, sports, genocide, my dead sister. Anything to get me to calm down before I pee my pants. Lorena puts a pillow over her face to control herself and muffle the noise, but it's no use. She's silent for a moment, and then a loud cackle escapes from her, which gets me going again. I cross my legs hard. I hope I can make it to the bathroom. That's when we hear the door open. Lorena said that her mom was working, and that Jose Luis wasn't supposed to come home for several more hours because he was picking up an extra shift. But here he is, walking in as we lie on the couch, high as hell. Lorena looks as if she's about to commit murder. What are you doing home already? I thought you were working. Lorena doesn't seem worried about the weed, just pissed that he's there. Business was slow, and the boss told me to go home, Jose Luis explains in his sing-songy style. He's Chilango, which means he's from Mexico City, which means he has a super annoying accent. What are you girls doing? He asks, as if we're all sharing a secret. It makes me feel gross. Neither one of us bothers to answer. Jose Luis has been Lorena's stepdad, step-boyfriend, for about 4 years now. She said that when he and her mom met, he'd just crossed the border, so he was the freshest kind of mojado. Now Jose Luis works as a busboy at a few different restaurants on Taylor Street, which is why he's always talking shit about Italians, always going on and on about how cheap they are. He and Lorena's mom are the most mismatched couple in the world because he's 15 years younger than she is, making him only 10 years older than Lorena. Weird. He'd be handsome if he weren't so sleazy. Every time I know he's going to be home, I wear my baggiest shirts and sweaters so he can't gawk at my boobs. Sometimes it feels like he's undressing us with his eyes. Jose Luis is always lounging around the house in an undershirt, listening to norteñas and polishing his pointy crocodile skin boots. Instead of leaving us alone like any normal dad, he's always asking us dumb questions about music, school, and boys. I wish he'd just shut up and leave us alone. I know Jose Luis is a creep, because last year Lorena told me he saw her going to the bathroom in the middle of the night and pushed her against the wall and kissed her. She said he crammed his tongue inside her mouth all nasty, and she could feel his penis against her leg.
I would have cut his balls off, I told her.